Welcome to the Pro-Life Team Podcast. I'm Jacob Barr, and I'm here with Connie Ambrecht. And I'm excited to have you on here, Connie. Would you introduce yourself for those who don't know you as of yet?
Sure, I'd love to, and thank you for having me. It's always fun to get to be able to catch up with others working in this life-affirming industry, and Jacob is certainly one of those folks who many of you know. And while some of you know me, or many of you may know me, there are many who do not. So I am Connie Ambrecht, as Jacob said, and I'm with Sparrow Solutions Group. Years ago, when we first launched our work in this market, in this life-affirming market, we were called Sonography Now. And some of you might have our LAMs, you might have a certificate from us, and that's who we were at the very beginning, over 20 years ago. And then we transitioned into who we are now, which is Sparrow Solutions Group. And when we look scripturally at what Sparrow means, we know that he cares for each one. He doesn't want one to fall that he would not know of. So that hence the reason he gave us that name. We too, as an organization, do not want one organization, one volunteer, one patient, one client to go untouched by the words that you bring to them. So we love our name, where we offer solutions. People know us as people who bring ideas and solutions to situations and to issues at hand. And we're now a group. We've been to every state over, you know, for years now, it's been that we've been to every state. We know centers all over, and we know that in your center, you may have someone who's gifted at a specific thing. So part of our role is to connect with those folks and have them as part of our group, just casually, but we may call upon you because you have the exact need that somebody needs across the country. So there's my intro, Jacob. How's that?
It was good. Yeah, I liked it. And I first remember seeing you around at the conferences many years ago. And then I believe we were neighbors at either a CareNet or a Heartbeat conference about 7 years ago. And I remember that because I remember when I was at, you know, next to your booth at that conference, I was really into my church's music, and we had just joined, I believe, a year or two of the church that we've been at since then. And I remember sharing some of the music with some of your colleagues there. And it just comes to mind as I'm thinking back about our history. And for this podcast, we want to talk about this mindset that you were sharing about. I want to learn more about it, where you're calling it launching every pregnancy. Tell us about this work that you're doing, you know, regarding that idea.
Okay, great. I love this opportunity because what we have seen, and one of the unique things about Sparrow is that we are, as I had said in my intro, we're in so many different pregnancy centers and pregnancy clinics. And what we started realizing as we were working with others years ago, that our mindset way, way, way back was that we wanted to address the abortion issue. That's how most centers got started, is because they wanted to address that particular issue. Well, over time, the patient that we have now is a different client than what we had 30 to 40 years ago. So the patients who come in now, you realize in the culture that we have today, we're going to be talking about mindset, the mindset of the medical industry, the mindset of the pregnancy center, the mindset of the patient. But we actually realized that for some centers, this isn't going to be for everybody, and we know that. But we also know that for some centers, it is very valuable to appreciate that in this day and time, in the culture of today, there is value in launching every pregnancy with a life-affirming message. So that's what we're going to be talking about.
Wow. Yeah, it makes me think. So essentially what I'm hearing is that there's different scenarios. There's the woman who's abortion-minded, abortion-vulnerable, life-minded, the woman who has a positive pregnancy test, the woman who has a negative pregnancy test. There's different scenarios, and it sounds to me like you're trying to provide care to all of the clients, or all of the pregnant clients, but I'm assuming maybe even all the clients. It sounds like that's where you're going with this. Is that right?
Yes. And the reason being, as I had just shared, is that we started realizing that the patient who's coming in and is abortion determined, we've even changed some of our language. So a patient mm-hmm. is abortion determined, and she sees no other way. She can't have a pregnancy right now, and there's just no other option for her. We have that client who comes in to our pregnancy medical clinic. And then we have a certain percentage of patients in our community who, when we look at them, everything is perfect. There's no reason for them to feel concerned about the pregnancy. Nothing would change their mind. Everything is, I'm going to parent. I'm going to carry and parent. And when I ask the average center, when we do board trainings or we are doing a clinic training, we're doing some organization development for our team, when I ask them, let's look at those percentages. So if I look at the average number of abortion determined, we know that the national average, according to Guttmacher and other people who gather the data, it has been 25% for a long time. So 25% of the patients that we see or that are in our community are thinking they'll terminate. Then we have this intending to carry or happy to carry or whatever plans to carry, whatever your organization calls that. We have that group of people, and that in the average community, when we talk to those different groups. So remember we said we might be doing a board training. So the board, as I'm stating this, you might be thinking in your own mind, yeah, what number do I think that is? So the board might think, well, it's about 50%, right? And so they're thinking that a good portion of the community has absolutely no risk factors. When I talk to the people who are working in the clinic, and they look at their numbers, guess what many of them say? They say, well, maybe 10%. Maybe 10% actually have no risk factors. So if I take the boots on the ground, the worker in the pregnancy clinic, excuse me, if I take that wording that she suspects and she's thinking it's about 10%, in places where we've gathered some of the data, it is about 10. It's about 10% of the women who come in are actually free of any kind of a risk in their mind. So they're thinking all is well. We know the other 25 is a given. So then if I combine that, so I've got 25, 35. So the biggest number is the people who are undecided, they're at risk, they're ambiguous about whether they'll carry or not. It's really not an excitement or determined I have to end this. It's this ambiguity. So if I know that the largest percent of women in my community who are of childbearing age, if I know that the largest percentage of those women are falling into this vulnerable category, I ask the organization, do I want to be including them in who I serve? And the answer from the boots on the ground is going to be yes. But I know that there are still pregnancy centers out there that only want to serve the abortion-minded. So now my numbers are going to drop. I'm only going to be getting that 25%. So I'm ignoring or not including or not advertising to, not counting all of those who are vulnerable. So if I look at the 25% and I add the 65%, so I'm at 90, if I'm wanting to serve 90% of the women in my community who are of childbearing age, and I want them to come in, and you know why? I want them to come in because I'm going to provide a life-affirming launch to their pregnancy. So if I look at that remaining 10%, why not? Why not include them? And I can usually ask them this next question. Do you have a question for me, Jacob? If I just get so enthused and continue talking, should I pause for a minute and let you ask me something?
Well, I love what I'm just writing down some questions. So I do have one. So what percent of the abortion determined may come into a pregnancy clinic? It sounds like that might be like 5% or something, but are they more likely to not, what percent might that be within the pregnancy clinic patient percentages?
I would guess on average, that's going to fall into a 10% or less. So you may be exactly right with estimating that to be about 5%. So there's aspects of our market who over these past, over the past 25, 30 years with having medical capabilities, we started with targeting that group. We wanted to hit the 25, but the reality over time of what it has become is now much broader. So to your point, yes, it's going to be about 5%. Who are actually determined, but we know as those working on the ground that with the vulnerability factors, I have a much larger percent who I want to have on a solid life plan, not just for this pregnancy, but it's to impact the culture. That's the job of a nonprofit organization is to impact the culture. So I want to impact the culture for life. So if I want to do that, I want to launch every pregnancy. So then we look at that small 10% that we know is happy to carry. Again, the boots on the ground, you can ask yourself, are those people really free of any pressures related to termination? And while they might be at 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks, things can happen at 20 weeks when that standard scan is done at the doctor's office. Things can happen in their life that can change what their circumstances are. And people are one circumstance away. That's not anything new. That's just human nature. I'm one circumstance away from not being able to do what I even normally do. I'm one circumstance away. If I'm struggling with anything, I can be one circumstance away from walking a different path related to, to the alcoholic. It's one circumstance away from, I got to have a drink. I'm one circumstance away from, I can't stay in this marriage anymore. I'm one circumstance away from name the thing that comes up with human nature. So
when it comes to when it comes to that largest group, the abortion vulnerable, the ones who are at risk or undecided, that probably fall between like 55 to 60% or maybe a little bit more even. It seems to me like those are if we had a low hanging fruit opportunity to make a difference, the easiest, or, the most accessible way to make, to sow into someone's life and make an impact where they need one thing or they need help avoiding that one thing that might, you know, be the straw that would put them into either, the, you know, that might put them into the camp of abortion minded. So how would you describe some of those risk factors that hit the undecided group? And then what can, you know, by in providing care for that largest group of more than 55%, you know, how does that care by a pregnancy clinic defend against those risk factors?
Great question. And when we're working with clinics, we don't have a set list. We know of circumstances that can put people in this place of indecision and not being super solid on, oh yeah, I'm going to have this baby. It can be, you know, I am for right now, but, and then you fill in the blank. And so that's where organizations, when we work with them, we have them do the exercise and it's jotting down in our area, what are the things that are risk factors? So I can look at a community and some of the average things that patients are going to be in between on or at risk for is they don't have work. Maybe the father of the baby's work is seasonal. Maybe the father of the baby has decided she wants to carry and he wants nothing to do with it. So it's relationships, and the relationship list can include a lot of things. It can be that he wants to leave. It can be he wants her to carry and she doesn't want to. It can be just all of the dysfunctions that can be in a non-healthy relationship. All of those can be part of it. It can be housing. It can be car expenses. It can be health issues. It can be distance. I had a patient who was concerned because she was new in town and wasn't familiar with resources. So because of being new in town, I might as well terminate and just start over and get myself situated in this new community and just not even have this baby. And when I repeated back to her, after we did the scan and we're seeing that little one on instant replay in the room, I said, well, now that we know you're 13 weeks, what you had originally shared with me was you wanted to terminate because of not knowing what the circumstances are. And she said, to hear you say that sounds really stupid. So it's this vulnerability piece that you want to launch with solid life affirmation so that you, again, you're changing the culture one patient at a time. And when they see and hear, they become then a more solid voice because of some of the tools we use, a medical shared decision-making tool. And I had a patient say to me, the value of this tool, what it has done for me, this was an intending to carry patient. And she said, I now know why I want to carry. So the tool helped her to realize, Here's why I value life. And it was able to be done in an exercise with that tool. So even the intending to carries have decisions that they need to make. They have things that they need to consider.
Okay. So when it comes to what you've just described, what I'm hearing is that it involves listening and discernment after asking really good questions. And the really good questions might come from understanding different scenarios and trying to guide someone down a path or towards a direction. And so how do you prepare someone, for doing that? Do you use role play, or do you echo back to the patient what she is saying so that she can hear it said? Like you just said, like that one lady, after hearing you repeat it back, it was really insightful for her to process it differently than it being in just in her mind. So yeah, how does that work when it comes to, how do you coach or train people to be able to guide someone through this, you know, wide range of scenarios that involve a lot of discernment?
So in hearing you talk about this wide range of scenarios, that is what reinforces. It is this wide range of circumstances and scenarios that position us to recognize, I actually want to launch every pregnancy. So if I'm going to launch every pregnancy, then I need to learn, how do I talk to them? So your question, Jacob, is right on track with, okay, I see what you're saying. So then how do you get people there? So remember, we're a training company. So obviously, as boots on the ground ourselves, every week in a different clinic or sometimes at the same clinic every month, we are very familiar with what it looks like. And so what your life looks like, when I say it, what it looks like, what the life of the pregnancy center looks like. So we know that it takes skills to do this kind of conversation. And CareNet and Heartbeat and NIFLA, there's organizations that are part of this industry that provide great trainings. What God shows us to do is trainings that are related that no one else is doing. So there is no one else who addresses launching every pregnancy. We teach motivational interviewing, and that is things certainly you wouldn't have to do our training to do that, but we've been doing it for a long time. And so to your point, Jacob, it is asking good questions. It's learning how to not tell, but instead learn. I don't need to tell her everything I need or everything I know that can solve her problem. I need to learn, what are her circumstances? What does she know about how to solve whatever that problem is, instead of her saying, I'm concerned about housing. I'm living out of my car and now I'm pregnant. So our typical is to say, well, we have this place available, this place available, this place. We start going through our list, our solution to what her problem is. But instead, pause and learn from her what she knows about her alternatives. What could be different? If you weren't living in the car, what would you like housing to look like? And then she's going to reminisce maybe about what it was like when she was at home with her parents. Maybe she's going to think about what it was like when she was in the foster home. She was in three different foster homes, and one stood out in her life as being, this was a nice place to stay. Well, what made it nice? I want her to build what she's looking for. So I'm changing her mindset. I'm bringing her back to strengths in her own life that can position her to affirm her situation and then build a plan to have a change in what she's doing and how is she going to accomplish that. And I can help her build a plan with how that can come about. So her options, when we teach options, it's not the traditional options counseling. It may be, and this was a real case for me, a patient that came in and her biggest concern was housing. Her test was positive. So now it comes to the options discussion. And the options discussion, remember, her biggest concern was housing. So I'm going to get into, what are the considerations there? What's before you? And her decisions to make were, do I stay in my own apartment? Do I move back in with my mom? Do I move in with the father of the baby and his parents? So those were the things that needed to be developed to help her build a plan. Did I know that she was at risk? Of course. We would all say yes. She has risk factors because she doesn't have a roof over her head. So I want to help her build something that she can live with and that can work, instead of me just giving her, well, here's places where you can go and get a roof over your head. None of those may work for her. I haven't really helped her. I've given her a list, but I'm not solving in her weigh what she knows and what she can build, and then start planting that desire in her heart. So when we look at, I can't help but do it here, because we're a faith-based organization, isn't that what Jesus did? What do you want your life to look like? I don't want you to be thirsty. I don't want you to be sorrowful. I don't want you to be unhappy. So he works with us. He brings each of us to that place where, with our own life circumstances, he helps us see, so here's how you can overcome that. Here's how you can solve that. Here's who you need to talk to. He gives us those things based on what we know.
So essentially what I'm hearing is that you have a wealth of knowledge from decades of experience that really helps you understand the field of options that someone may be considering or has. And the previous episode on this podcast was essentially there was a request from someone to publish a workshop from Sister Paula. And so I published a workshop from 7 years ago from International Life Services Advanced Training Institute. And in that recording, Sister Paula went through questions and she did role play all by herself, being both sides, you know, being the patient or the client, along with being the counselor. And I feel like you've got a similar amount of knowledge or a similar amount of experience. How many years have you been in this field, in this area, doing this work? If I had to guess, I would get 20, but maybe 30 plus, or I'm not quite sure.
So I started as a sonographer probably before you were born, Jacob. I've been doing ultrasound for a long time. And it was shortly after I started doing sonography that I was seeing life on the screen, and those lives that I was seeing on the screen were impacting me as someone who's post-abortive. So I'm seeing those little lives, and I started struggling with. So this is way back in the late 70s, and I'm looking at these little lives, and I'm thinking, okay, they said it was nothing, but I'm clearly seeing it's something. And I'd struggle with, dare I call it a life? Okay, so then that means, okay, if it's a life, then that means I took a life. So then as a believer, so I was a believer. So then I'm realizing, okay, if I took a life, I always put that as one of the worst things a person could do. And there I was faced with, I think that's what I've done. So you work through that and you overcome that and you go through some healing. And so then having gone through some healing and, you know, on my own, just asking the Lord to forgive me and walking through that, then I started using, so when you talk about how far back did you do this, I would have conversations with patients in my ultrasound room who had either shown up in the ER because they'd had an abortion, and so now I'm scanning them, I'm the one on call, or I'm the one working that shift when they came in, and I started getting pretty bold. And it wasn't anything that you need to change your thinking. I would just briefly share a little bit about my testimony. And as God put me in positions where I could do that, it wasn't going to cost me my salvation if I didn't do it. But what I learned was I could trust him. My trust of him and who he was putting in my path grew as a young woman. So I'm seeing, okay, so you know how we all have our own walk? So my walk was tied to that issue early on because of the work he put in my path and how those patients then are now crossing my path and I'm able to talk about it. And the more opportunities I had, the little bit that I shared, he just was giving me good confirmation and affirmation that, yes, sleep well, my friend. You have done what I have asked you to do. So that continued. And then I started volunteering at a pregnancy center, not even knowing anything about them. I had a coworker who said, Connie, you might want to volunteer at the time it was called Cobb Pregnancy Services. And so I started volunteering there. And, you know, like many volunteers, you think you're going there because you are going to bring them what they need. And there's some truth to that. You're bringing your RN credential, you're bringing your master's in theology credential, you're bringing whatever you bring. So I was at that time bringing my RDMS. So I started scanning, and the first time that I went in there and when I left, I was a changed person. I thought, this has nothing to do with what I'm going to do for them. This has everything to do with what he's going to continue to do in me, because I was realizing, oh my gosh, in here, wow, I have the freedom. Oh my gosh, it is a wow, Jacob. It was an unbelievable experience passing through the navy blue door. That was the color of their front door at the time. And when I went through that door, I thought, I'll never be the same. And it, you realize the impact it has on your family. I had no idea that just a few years later, I would be plugging in and being an instructor at NIFLA, and recognizing then that people needed to have some sonography training and praying, Lord, somebody needs to help them. So then he tells me, well, I've been preparing you. Aren't you willing to go? And I said, oh yeah, I am willing to go. So I'm not an arguer with him, but what I am is a slow learner. So he had to do all that prep work with me at the hospital so that I'd, yeah, okay, I get it. Okay, look what I can do. Okay, Lord, I'm tracking. So then, you know, he's asking, well, why don't you help him? So that's when Sonography Now got started. So wow, that was, so yeah, you're right. A long time, but I even was given that opportunity in a secular setting. And so it doesn't alarm me at all. And I don't feel that people have to shy away from any faith-based discussion, because there's professional organizations that allow us to have those. In fact, they're actually required to be accredited with some organizations. So anyhow, there's lots of pieces to all of that, but yeah, goes a long way back.
Wow. And I love the motto you mentioned before, changing the culture one patient at a time. You know, as someone who's experiencing one patient at a time and having dialogue and providing service, medical service, really, yeah, with the goal of really bringing, you know, helping that person understand and see, and asking that person very good questions and guide and providing guidance through questions or really good insight. Would you share, what is the medical decision-making tool? You mentioned that before. Would you go over sort of like what that is?
I can go over it briefly. Do a shared decision guide based on some professional organizations that developed a medical decision-making tool for the secular world. And I learned about it when I was speaking at the AIUM. So for anyone who's familiar with the AIUM, the American Institute of Ultrasound and Medicine, they set the guidelines for imaging and what you're going to do in an ultrasound department. And in attending there, I was going to be speaking on, you're going to love this topic. So that organization allowed me to speak in 2006. They allowed me to speak on purpose-driven scanning. It was so exciting to even get accepted, but we did. And so I shared in, these were small groups that were breakouts, and the group was pretty full, but it was a fun thing. So that's why I was at the AIUM. So in presenting, then, you know, you're there, you're getting CEs and you're participating in talks. And they had a talk that was being given about decision making with patients at the time. So remember, this is 2006, and it had to do with patients making decisions related to getting the ultrasound done at between 11 and essentially 14 weeks. So between 11 and 14 weeks, and doing a nuchal translucency measurement test. And that has to do with finding children that have risks for Down syndrome and what that imaging was going to look like. And they were talking on giving the patient the opportunity to choose if she wanted that testing. And so the tool that they were referring to was the Ottawa Decision Guide. Well, the Ottawa Decision Guide is very one outcome based. So people were given at that time, these physicians that spoke, they were talking about finding abnormalities with the baby and then what that imaging, should a patient get it, shouldn't they get it? And there were physicians that spoke, and then the last physician on the panel, her time was cut because the others went over. And she had probably 5 minutes remaining. And in her 5 minutes, the thing that she said was, I want everyone in this room, and I was in that room with my husband, who was an ED at that time at a pregnancy center. She said, I want everyone in this room to remember the patient has a right to choose. And if she wants to carry, regardless of what the issue is with that baby, she can. So my takeaway, as I was hearing about the tool, and I ended up asking them, you know, they present and then they let people ask questions because it was physicians presenting the tool. I wondered, okay, so would they ever have a sonographer? Would they allow a sonographer to go over this with a patient? And so I asked them and they said, oh yeah, anyone can do it. But they said, when we look at our own practices, we wouldn't have a sonographer do it because the sonographer's busy enough just doing scans. So I then saw, okay, so in a place then where there is time, can I use a tool like this? So back in 2006, we started developing that tool to be used in this clinical setting. And it addresses, you know, the issues that we were seeing and the issues that we still see. And those are, you know, what's her greatest concern? What's driving the decision? Instead of just addressing her decision to, I want to terminate, it's in a healthy way getting to what's driving it. Why does she feel that there's no other out? And while people would talk about it, our industry on average did not have a good tool. So we started training on it in 2009, and there's clinics. I just touched base with one who was one of the early people to do that training. It was an executive director who worked for Focus at the time, as well as her clinic, and she wanted that training. And I touched base with them just this past, month and a half ago at CareNet, and they're still using that tool. It has had some modifications, and you know, they're thinking about doing an update because we've certainly had updates. So anyhow, that tool then got designed to be used in our industry. And so right from the beginning, it talks about if your test is positive, and then if it turns out your test is negative. So that one of the issues centers run into is that with the negative test, she's ready to go. Everything's solved. I'm not pregnant. No, if your test is negative, you have different decisions. But I can't catch her, or I can't help her to invest some time in her own reproductive health if I haven't talked about it right from the beginning. So by addressing the negative test right from the beginning, she already has on her decision guide, well, what will I be concerned about if the test is negative? So then the nurse or the advocate or the RDMS, whoever on the team is meeting with that client or that patient, as we prefer, meeting with that patient, they can then address, so now that your test is negative, what decisions do you face? So it helps her, again, we're all about building a plan. I want to change her life because I can see from what she's sharing with me, she's struggling with certain aspects of it. I'm not making the judgment about it. She's telling me what the struggles are. And I can empathize. I see what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. The father of the baby just is just going to be starting a 10-year sentence. and you have now found out you're pregnant. So all the things that cross our path, she knows her life the best. I don't. So I don't have her answers. I need to look in the mirror and look at the answers to my own things, but I can share with someone else where to get a drink of water. I can share some tools if she tells me more about what her situation is. So with launching every pregnancy, each clinic needs to appreciate they are the most valuable place to start a pregnancy in this day and time, because no one else has time. My pro-life OBGYN office, on average, does not have time to dig into issues. That's not why he's there. It's not why she's there. They're there to provide OB care. And yes, they value life, but they don't have the time you do. So to change the culture, I want to begin launching every pregnancy with life-affirming conversation so I can change my community and the way it talks about life. So I become the most valuable ministry in that town because I'm launching new schools. I'm launching new car dealerships. I'm launching new restaurants. I'm launching growth because I'm reinforcing the value of every life, the mom, the baby, her support people, but I'm launching that pregnancy.
Wow. So I want to ask you to pray, but I want to do this in a bit of a unique way. So about, 9 minutes ago or 10 minutes ago, one of my colleagues just sent my team a prayer request, and I'm going to go ahead and read it and then ask for you to pray as we close out this podcast, because it's very timely when it comes to your voice and your experience. So my colleague Kelly sent me sent my team a prayer request that says, prayers needed now for a abortion determined patient at Shreveport Pregnancy Center. Her aunt is a prior worker for the abortion clinic, which she has expressed guilt, but patient feels abortion is the only option. Pray for God to open her heart, eyes, and give a great scan/heartbeat. And so it's obviously anonymized, which is good. So I can just read it. And my colleague Kelly used to be the executive director there at Shreveport in Texas. So Connie, would you pray as we close out this podcast and pray for this patient who's part of that less than 10%, scenario or, case, as they're working on this one there in Shreveport this morning?
Well, there's nothing like a good chance to pray, right? So dear Heavenly Father, we are excited to be able to come to you. That we can come before your throne and lay our requests at your feet is just such a privilege as your children. And Lord, we know that so many have struggles, have difficulties, and have remorse. As I think about this aunt and the work she used to do, and then you have a niece. She now has a niece who is wanting to walk the path where she worked. So she knows the pain that can go with post-abortion. We know that this young lady is working through, what is it? What is the biggest thing? Lord, if you'll show her what the biggest issue is, she may be able to just work through whatever that obstacle is with the help of that aunt, with the help of her own mom, with the support of the center that she's in. Only you know every detail of her life. And in so knowing, you are the only one positioned to share some intricate detail of her life story that puts her in a place where she says, oh my gosh, I can't do it. And she knows that oh my gosh moment came from you. because you dug up something so deep in her story that she recalls this intricate detail of where she overcame, where she had a second thought, where she had a circumstance, where she had a word. I don't know what it is, but I know you can do that. And we're going to rest in knowing that you are doing it. And while we have the tools of the imaging, we have the tools of seeing the heartbeat, all those things are there. The greatest tool we have is you. You give us technology, you give us our voices, you give us our hands and feet so that we can be a vessel. We can be a fresh vessel every day. But we know that it's you, and we need to rely on you and not look at the, there's a verse that talks about how I will not rely on my bows with my arrow, that I will count on you. While I have the tools, I will count on you for that victory. So it's in your precious name, Jesus, that I pray, and that I give thanks to Jacob and his team, and that he would have a prayer request at such a time as this. And it's in your name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Wow. Well, I think I might just end the podcast right there. I think that was, that's really good. That was really good, Connie. I really enjoy your the way you're including all the scenarios and all the patients in the work, instead of, you know, I feel like it's almost like a trap where we fall into trying to serve only a portion of the scenarios or a portion of our clients. And we really need to serve everyone with where they're at and what they need that comes to us.
Yeah. And
so that's really good.
Some who will question then, well, how do I raise up the board and how do I raise up my donor? It's giving them the education and transitioning to, here's how many life-affirming starts we did this month. And they all have their own stories, and those are powerful to those donors, and it can help the donor and the board member and the new volunteer to appreciate, here's why we want to launch every pregnancy, and here's how we're going to change our culture.
Yeah, that's good. I like that phrase, launching every pregnancy. That's a really good phrase.
Well, thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Connie.
And
yeah.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Father, come we this day to the Son, come we to the Holy Spirit, come we this day with God, come we this day with Christ, come we with the Spirit powerful. Spirit and